Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to another Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.oleole.com. There was no Arscast last week, as I'm sure you all realized, and that wasn't my fault. Nope, absolutely not. It was the fault of the interlull. Yes, the very same interlull for whom we can blame our players being injured. The players that we sent away in tip-top condition that have come back broken. Like old Ford Cortinas they are. We sent them Porsches and Daimlers and Jaguars. And they sent us back Ford Cortinas and 1970 Skodas. The good news, however, is that there is no more interlull between now and the end of the season. So, might I just take this opportunity to say fuck you, Michel Platini, and fuck you, Sepp Blatter, and fuck you, anybody else involved in international football. We have Arsenal on now, so you can all just go somewhere and do things to each other. Yeah. Well, we don't want to know about them. Just go do them. Practice throat slashing on each other. That'd be good. Self-harm yourselves in the jugular vein. How about that? We'll come to all the injury news a little bit later on in the show. Also to come, Gilberto Silva from Gunnerblog.com to talk about the game against Man City. Can we pick up where we left off? Because we were on such a good roll, such a good run before the interlull kicked in. He'll also be talking about the Villarreal game coming up on Tuesday. What else have we got? We've got Tony Adams has got some poetry, the man in the bar is here, and a few other bits and pieces as well. So between the last Arscast and this Arscast, not a great deal has been happening. We know that Hull City submitted their evidence to the FA over the Cesc Fabregas spitting incident. It's all well and good. It's been very quiet from the FA. We haven't heard anything. They managed, remarkably, to get an extension to the deadline to submit the information because they said everybody was away on international duty. And I think it was Good Player on his blog that pointed out, well, they got an extension, but everybody that was on international duty was still on international duty. So, how does that work? They got independent lawyers and all kinds of things involved. So, we'll see what happens. But so far, we've heard nothing from the FA. And they're usually reasonably quick these days to level charges when charges need to be leveled. Cesc, of course, is denying everything. They're saying, oh, we saw it, we all saw it, everyone saw it. Yeah, everyone. So we'll wait and see. The other news involving Cesc, of course, was that of Joan Laporta. And I expect Arsenal to get a little bit cross about this. And rightly so. Because we read the comments from Laporta. He said, oh, I badly want to see Cesc in a Barcelona shirt. We're aware he's a very talented player and he perfectly knows Barcelona's style. Well, let's be clear about this. Pretty much every player playing the game of football, and every fan who watches football knows Barcelona's style. You know the way they like to play, attacking football, 4-3-3 kind of job. Everyone knows that. Just because he knows it doesn't make him any different from the rest of us, apart from the fact he's much, much better at football than us, of course. But he said he is a homegrown player who is happy at Arsenal, and it would be a lack of respect to Arsenal to speak about it, he said, speaking about it. I mean, for fuck's sake. Seriously, the man needs to really kind of think about what he's saying before he actually says it. Because otherwise he just looks like, you know, a knob. More of a knob, I should say. So those were the two things involving Cesc, kinda. One, because Hull City were talking about him, and the other because Barcelona were talking about him. We've got better news about Cesc a little bit later on in the show. Now, the other big story of the week, of course, was the share sale. Danny Fisman sold 5,000 of his shares to Stan Kroenke. That leaves Fisman with 16.1% of the club and Kroenke with 20.5% now. So in the very short term, it's hard to see what difference it makes. The friendly directors, the alliance, if you want to call them that, still maintain the same amount of shares as they did. They just spread out a bit more between different directors. You have to think, though, that there's a deliberate move to strengthen the position of Kroenke. What it means in the long term remains to be seen. Lady Nina's shares are up for grabs. She wants to sell. She has wanted to sell for quite some time. Where they'll end up, we just don't know. Usmanov is there. He's got his 25% and doesn't seem to be doing anything more at the moment. There's still other shares. Richard Carr is a director who's no longer on the board. Whether or not his shares are up for grabs remains to be seen. So it's hard to know what's going to happen. In the long term, though, you have to think that the more shares that Kroenke accumulates, the more likely it is that he is going to end up as the owner of Arsenal. Quite how quickly that's going to happen, I don't know. But it just seems inevitable. And in one way, it's kind of sad, because Arsenal has been built on this tradition of Englishness. And as an Irish person, you know, it doesn't really make any difference to me whether the owner is English or American or whatever. But there is something very traditional about the way Arsenal has been owned and run down the years. And I think it will be a shame if we were to lose that. It would be nice if we could get an amalgamation of the two, of the foreign investment, of Kroenke's investment, whilst maintaining a certain English Englishness to the directors and to the board. And I don't know. Anyway, maybe that's just me wishful thinking. In these days, you have to accept the fact that everything is global. Your football club is global. And that people who want to invest in sports clubs and franchises, as they call them, are going to do that. And that's just the way it is. Chelsea are foreign-owned. Villa are foreign-owned. Liverpool are foreign-owned. Manchester United is foreign-owned. And so it goes. Unless you're in a situation which is impossible, I think, to create now, like someone like Barcelona, where the club is owned by the fans. Unless you've done that years and years ago, I don't think that's in any way possible to do it now. That would be the ideal situation, I think. But I think it's too late for that, and there's too much money in the English game, and we'll just have to see what happens. But it'll be very interesting, I think, to see where we are a year from now. Now, okay, that's all the kind of news stories that have gone on. Before we get to Gilberto Silva, here's Tony.
Hello, Tony Adams here again with another poem on the Arsecast. It has been a long and terrible time without football, and that is the fault of the interlull. Time when international football takes over, and we all have to wait for the real stuff to come back. Today's poem is entitled Interlull, and it goes a little bit like this. Oh, interlull. Thank you very much.
More poetry from Tony Adams on another Arsecast in the very near future. Now, joining me to talk about Manchester City tomorrow, the interlull, the game against Villarreal coming up on Tuesday, is Gilberto Silva from gunnerblog.com. Hello.
Hey.
The interlull, it was quite a long one this time. How did you cope?
Not particularly well. I was writing on my blog this morning. I started having dreams about club football. Because I missed it so much. It felt particularly painful. I don't know why. I think it's because we were doing quite well beforehand. For much of the season, it's been sort of a bit nice to have a break from our form. But because we'd sort of hit a good patch, it was a bit of a pain to leave it all behind.
Yeah, I considered turning to crime to get past it. Yeah, petty crime, not serious crime or anything. Just,
sure.
You know,
I almost went and did some protesting, you know, not that I care about issues or anything, but just felt, you know, it would pass the time.
It's that whole gang mentality. You got caught up with the posse.
That's why, if there's club football happening right now, the streets would be clear. They'd be empty.
Absolutely. The world leaders could go about their business and look after us all like we know they want to. I mean, that's their first concern, is to make sure we're all right, you know?
I know. Well, you'd think they could have sorted the football schedule, you know, to give them an easier time.
Yeah. Chelsea fans, I bet, most of them.
Yeah, I should think so.
You mentioned the gap, because we were doing rather well up until the interlull kicked in. It didn't come at a great time. We had built momentum. How do you think we're going to cope with that? We seem to have coped relatively well with the last couple of international breaks.
Yeah, I mean, I think we should be all right. I mean, the big thing, I suppose, the major talking point, I'm sure we'll come on to it, is that we've got a couple of players, one in particular, back from injury, which should, you know, provide us with some fresh impetus. We start with a home game against a side who haven't got the best defence in the league. And I think it's a good opportunity for us to sort of pick up where we left off, really.
Yeah, you mentioned one player coming back, and obviously that's Cesc Fabregas. At the moment, we don't have any other team news or injury news after the internationals, and we know there are some doubts, but we'll wait to hear what people say about that. But Fabregas is coming back. In one way, it's strange, because our best form of the season, our best run of the season, has coincided with him being out of the team. But I don't think you can underestimate how much he does bring to this side, and what a difference he's going to make, particularly if he's coming back fresh and full of vim and vigour and ready to play again.
Yeah, I mean, his form in the first half of the season wasn't that great. And there was a lot of talk about, you know, burnout and having played through the summer in the European Championships. But he's had a bit of a layoff now, and I'm sure we'll be in tip-top condition. Arsene's saying he needs a few games to get fully back up to speed. But I think he'll go straight into the side, really. I think he'll start on Saturday. And I think that, and probably on Tuesday as well. But what will be interesting, I suppose, is who he's partnered with, how the dynamic of the side changes. Because we've been playing with two fairly deep holding-ish midfielders of late. You know, it's been Danielson and Song, or Song and Diaby and something like that. I mean, I wonder who'll keep in the side, with Arshavin and Nasri now playing on the flanks, and a lot of creative input there. It'll be interesting to see how Fabregas links up with those two.
I think he's going to keep Danielson in the side, I have to say.
Yeah, I think so as well, simply because Danielson is the, you know, the principal ball winner and ball carrier, and he was in the side. He's been in the side all season long. He's been the one man who sort of hasn't really shifted. So I would expect him to play. I certainly don't think it'll be Diaby, because I think that he, like Fabregas, tends to get forward more. I think it'll be Fabregas and one of Danielson or Song.
It's interesting, isn't it, maybe how Danielson's, the perception of Danielson has changed, in the sense that we would all look at him at the start of the season as sort of Cesc light. He was that kind of player. He was a little bit crafty, and now he seems to have adapted or changed his game, whether he's had to do it on purpose. He's had to do that. And might it improve him to have somebody like Fabregas, where he can do the busy stuff, running around in front of the back four, making all the interceptions he seems to make, and then give it to Fabregas, who can actually do more with the ball, with the greatest of respect, than Song can or Diaby can?
Well, I think so, but then, you know, I'm a bit cautious, because in the first half of the season, we saw Fabregas and Danielson play together a lot, and it wasn't particularly successful. I think Danielson has stepped up somewhat since Fabregas has been out, and I think our central midfield, the central midfield area, seems to have improved a little. But I think that hopefully, you know, with Danielson having improved in Cesc's absence, when he comes back in, it'll be a better product than it was before Christmas.
A lot of football coming up, obviously. We've got Manchester City, and I suppose a bit of revenge on the minds of the players. Well, I would hope there is, because the away game at whatever the hell the Man City Stadium is called, Eastlands.
Yeah.
Well, that's the worst name for a stadium I've ever heard, I have to say.
Well, is that what it's called? I mean, Eastland and City of Manchester as well.
City of Manchester.
Yeah.
I don't really think of a better name. Like the Blue Megadome or something. That would have been much better. But anyway, the performance there was pretty much abject. One of the worst performances of the season. We got turned over 3-0, and it might have been 5, and it might have been 6, the way we played that day. So a little bit of pride to be restored as well.
I think so, and for me, I mean, that was just the most dreadful game to watch. We were absolutely appalling, and we had a hell of a lot of injuries. I remember Gavin Hoyt was playing that game because we had to take a few players available at the back. But nonetheless, we were terrible, really, in every department. And Man City, you know, at home, they're a very different prospect to what they are away. Away from the blue megadome or whatever it might be called. And hopefully that will, you know, help us out. I mean, the likes of Robinho, who was excellent on that day, I remember, doesn't really turn up away from home. And I think that could definitely work to our benefit.
All right, so provided we kick things...
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog.
Off well in the league. We've got the none too small matter of the Champions League then coming up on Tuesday. Villarreal are in the top four in Spain. They're a very good team. We've got a bit of history with them. We've scored one goal. One goal was enough to see us through to the final back in 2006. So they, as much as we want revenge against Manchester City, they will be looking at that game as a revenge game too. They have players that we should be not afraid of, but certainly respectful of.
They do. I mean, they're not a team necessarily full of stars. I remember when we last played them, it was Juan Riquelme who, you know, made everything tick. You know, there's some good players. There's the likes of Cazorla and Rossi, and there's, you know, Robert Pires, of course, who I don't think started that much of late, but it's just on a new contract, so he's obviously still very much valued there, still a great player. But they, you know, they just play a solid game. They're fairly consistent in terms of being in the top four in Spain, and they will be out for revenge. I mean, they were a penalty kick away, you know, from sort of putting us out, as it were. And I think they'll be fully aware of that. Jens Lehmann kept us from the competition on that occasion. And I think that it will be closer than a lot of people think. A lot of people, I mean, undoubtedly it's one of the easier draws that we could have, but that doesn't make it an easy draw.
Fourth in Spain against fourth in England. So, you know, from that point of view, if you want to judge the merits of each league, it seems to be a fairly even match. A goal, at least, is going to be vital, I think, if we want to go through. I know we've been defensively good, but an away goal, particularly to take back to the second leg at home, would be brilliant.
Yeah, because, you know, although our defending has improved, I just don't necessarily rely on us to keep a clean sheet at home, and that's so important in this competition. It's funny, it's, you know, it's sort of it's the dynamic has changed. It used to be considered a real advantage to have the second leg at home because you could, you know, overturn a deficit that you might have picked up in the away leg. Now, having it the other way around, so you know if you need to go and get an away goal, seems to be almost more beneficial. But on this occasion, if we can go and get, you know, I don't know, if we a score draw would be a good result, but I think we're more than capable of going there and winning, to be honest.
Yeah, me too. Anyway, I shall see you there at some point. We'll have a beer in Spain because I think we're both going down for that game, so it should be fun. For now, though, Gilberto Silva from GunnerBlog.com, thank you very much.
Cheers.
Thank you very much to Gilberto Silva from GunnerBlog.com, and you can check out his site at www.gunnerblog.com. Speaking of Arsenal bloggers and other Arsenal blogs, I have to doff my Arsenal cap that I'm not wearing. I don't have any hatwear or headwear in this room at all. Do I? No. I've got scarves and shirts and envelopes aren't hats. Nevertheless, I must doff my cap, imaginary as it is, to Gunnar Holick, who ran a story on April Fools about about Platini and restricting the nationality of fans that can attend Champions League games. It was an April Fool and quite a clever one, and it fooled quite a number of people, it has to be said. But the best thing of all was that on the Times Online, The Game, which is the Times podcast, Gabriel Marcotti, who's obviously a very, I find it quite an interesting journalist, somebody said to him, hello, Gabriel, was wondering if you'd read this blog about the new UEFA rules for next season's Champions League, and provided a link to Gunnar Holick's blog. And Marcotti said, I read it, and I'm going to check up on it, but I'm inclined to give Platini the benefit of the doubt here. Blah, blah, blah. Hook, line, and motherfucking sinker. That is absolute class from Gunnar Holick. So well done to you, sir. I think it's brilliant that an April Fool can actually still work. Because I know that if I do something on Arsblog, everyone goes, yeah, it's just April Fool's Day. You fucking cunt. You just wasted your time and our time. But fair play to Holick. He pulled it off with aplomb. And not for the first time, from what I hear anyway. I'm sitting here with the window open, you know, in Dublin, in April, and the window's open. It's fantastic. The weather is brilliant. I hope the weather will be suitably brilliant or similarly brilliant in Valencia next Tuesday night, because it's going to be great going down for the Villarreal game, travelling via Barcelona on Monday night, so I might be around in Barcelona for some drinkies on Monday night. I have to check with my Italian pals who I'm staying with if it's all right, if I can get a key to their house, otherwise I just have to sit in their sofa or something. But yeah, hopefully the weather will be good. And yeah, San Miguel, Paella. I'm looking forward to it. Oh, there's a game of football too. Even better. It's fantastic. Now, the man in the bar.
Hey there, Arse Blogger. How's it going there? Hey, I thought you'd be down for a little mojito tonight. Grab a seat there. There you go. Good man. Would you like me to push your stool in? Right, okay. Busy here. You know, I was on a worldwide tour with the band. Yeah, we were in Leitrim, Offaly, Kildare, Galway, Waterford, Kerry, Roscommon, and County Louth. Which, as you might imagine, was the low point of the whole thing, but we won't go into that. I was looking at the old Arsenal news there. It seems a number of our players have gone away on international duty and come back broken. Now, this is not acceptable, is it? By any standards, if you send something away in perfectly good condition and it comes back broken, why is the onus on you to repair it and to bear the cost of that breakage? What I think we should do, right, is before we send any more of our players away with their countries, we do a deal with the national associations. So, if, for example, Croatia want Eduardo, they send us 10 Croatian children. If Eduardo comes back fine, they get all 10 children back unharmed. If Eduardo comes back with a little groin tweak, they get 9 children. If he comes back with knee ligament damage, they get 6 children. If he comes back with a sprained ankle, they get 8 children. And if he breaks his leg or does a cruciate ligament, they don't get any of those children back whatsoever. What were we going to do with the children? I know it is a fair proportion of your listenership out there that are going to kill them. Now, I wouldn't be in favour of that at all. However, I think Arsenal should set up a butler school. Right? So any of those children that don't go back to their own countries after our player gets injured while playing international football, we train them from the age of 7 or 8 to be butlers. And then we sell the butlers around the world to rich people. Because these will be the creme de la creme of butlers. The Liam Brady of butlers, if you will. That way then, Arsenal will have some compensation when our players get injured on international duty. And the funds raised from selling these children as butlers would go in the future to help us buy new players. I don't really see how anybody could have any problem with it whatsoever. In fact, I'm going home to write a letter right now to Ivan Gazidis about it. You stay here, finish your drink. The fellow over there looks like he wants to talk to you. Could you do anything for the hoochie?
We'll have more from the man in the bar on next week's Arsecast. Now, it all starts again tomorrow. The run-in, the final part of the season, kicks off tomorrow at 3 o'clock at home to Manchester City. As I said to Gilberto Silva, there is a measure of revenge about this game because we were so played off the park at the Blue Megadome that it just wasn't funny. It happened in November. It wasn't a good month for us. We were beaten by Stoke. Away. And although we beat Manchester United and followed that up, I think, with a win in the Carling Cup, was it against Wigan? We then lost at home to Aston Villa. And then we went to Manchester City. And that is when this team, I think, hit rock bottom. Because since then, we've been on this unbeaten run. We haven't always played great football, but we haven't been beaten yet in the league. So, from that point of view, it's something we can look back on and learn from. And obviously we changed things after that game because it was just so bad. They took us to pieces, which I don't think I've really seen any team do to us in the same way in the last few years. The last time I can really remember a team going mad on us and looking at them and going, oh my God, how are we going to get anything? The Champions League game against Barcelona, when it was Kanu, I think, who scored an equaliser in the Nou Camp. But in the first half of that game, I don't think I've ever seen us outplayed. And not even that they had that many chances, but just we couldn't get near the ball. But Manchester City, you know, in November, they took us to pieces. So we'll be out for revenge tomorrow. And obviously to try and keep things going and pick up where we left off, because we were on a pretty good run. The injury news is not great. Let's look at the positives first. Cesc is back, Adebayor is back, and Walcott is back. That's all good. That is good. However, Van Persie is out with a groin injury. Eduardo is out with a groin injury. Diaby is out with a thigh injury, and that appears to be the same injury that he keeps picking up over and over and over again, that thigh injury. I think that's what's kept him out for a good while earlier in the season. Nasri has the flu, so we don't know if he's going to be okay to play on Saturday or not. And Carlos Vela is coming all the way back from Mexico, so he may not play. So I suppose it balances out in a way. We've got Adebayor and Walcott back in, but Van Persie and Eduardo out. Obviously, the main news is that Fabregas is back, and there's no doubt in my mind that he's going to start the game. We spoke earlier to Gilberto Silva about it and what sort of impact he might have. And what was interesting was he was talking about how fatigued he was, how he played so many games for Arsenal, played the European Championships. He went into the season carrying a bit of an injury, which is maybe why we didn't see the best of him or him play as well as we know he can. There were other factors as well. The fact that he didn't have someone like Flamini around him, I think was a factor in why he didn't quite find his form. But he's had the injury, he's rested, he's hungry to come back, and he is, without question, the best midfielder we have at the club. And going into this final part of the season where we need somebody with that bit of craft, that bit of guile, somebody who can spot that pass, somebody with a bit of quality and a bit of class in midfield, it's going to be fantastic to have him back. I think that he won't necessarily play the full 90 against Manchester City. I think the boss will be hoping that
in the first hour of the game, we can get a couple of goals and he can take Cesc off then and give him a rest because he wants to get him back in slowly. We've seen it with Eduardo, with Van Persie. We've seen it time and time again that when a player comes back from injury, he's susceptible to picking up another little strain or a little niggle that'll keep him out for another couple of weeks. And another couple of weeks at this stage of the season is a very big chunk of games. So we need Cesc to stay as fit as possible right to the end of the season, obviously. So that's why I think, if at all possible, he'll try and only give him 60 minutes and ease him back into things, because obviously we've got to go to Spain then on Tuesday, and then we've got more football the following weekend, and so many games coming up in the next month and a half. So it's going to be really, really interesting. So that's about it, really. There isn't much else to talk about. We will obviously have more next week when there's all kinds of football going on, but that's about it. I won't be here, obviously, next week, Tuesday or Wednesday. You will have the pleasure of Tom's company. He'll be doing the blog for you. So, obviously, I'll talk to you all over the weekend and Monday and after the trip to Spain via Barcelona to Valencia on to Villarreal. Come on, I can't wait. It's going to be fantastic. Hopefully, we'll see a good game on Tuesday and the right result for the Arsenal. And talk to you on next week's Arsecast then. Okay, until then, take it easy. Bye-bye.
Now, another Things That Are Mustard. And here's your host, David Bentley.
All right, welcome to Things That Are Mustard with me, David Bentley, the most mustard footballer in the Premier League. This week, my thing that is mustard is parking in handicap spaces, because handicapped people get free parking, along with free televisions and puppies. But the best thing about parking in an handicapped space is you can see a real handicapped person going around looking for somewhere to park, and you're parked in their space with a much better car, because their cars are crap, innit? They've got like a little knob on the steering wheel, and you're thinking, you're a little handicapped knob steering wheel bloke, and I'm in your space. Now that is what I call proper mustard.
Things That Are Mustard is brought to you in association with Mustard. It's mustard.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.